This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
First sentencing for Manafort. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Friday, March 8th. Glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort was sentenced to 47 months in prison for tax and bank fraud. He'll be sentenced next week in a separate case.
The Trump administration may require that hospitals and doctors publicly reveal the secretly negotiated prices they charge insurance companies.
The House has passed a watered-down resolution that condemns hate.
And teachers in half of all states suddenly in line for raises.
Right now, you know, every state is reporting some kind of teacher vacancies. So the lawmakers are saying, look, we can avoid a strike, and also we can attract teachers by raising pay, which obviously the strikes really did shine a light on teacher pay.
Wall Street Journal reporter Tonell Hobbs on the impact of recent teacher strikes. The man who briefly served as President Trump's campaign manager has been sentenced to 47 months in prison for tax and bank fraud unrelated to his work with Mr. Trump. A federal judge in Virginia yesterday said guidelines calling for Paul Manafort to spend between 19 and 24 years in prison were, quote, out of whack. Sitting in a wheelchair, Mr. Manafort read a brief statement that said, "To say that I feel humiliated and ashamed would be a gross understatement." Mr. Manafort's attorney is Kevin Downing.
As you heard in court today, Mr. Manafort finally got to speak for himself. He made clear he accepts responsibility for his conduct.
A prosecutor on special counsel Robert Mueller's team said Mr. Manafort provided no help and only offered information already known to investigators. The judge also ordered Mr. Manafort to pay $25 million in restitution. He is scheduled to be sentenced in a different trial next Wednesday for conspiracy against the government and conspiracy to obstruct justice. The House has overwhelmingly approved a broad resolution condemning hate in all forms, a response to a freshman Democrat's remarks that were seen as anti-Semitic. All Democrats voted in favor. At issue were comments from Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, who last week spoke of people who, quote, push for allegiance to a foreign country, which many listeners viewed as referring to Israel. Florida Democrat Ted Deutsch.
Any attack must be condemned when it's based on hatred. But when a colleague invokes classic anti-Semitic lies three times, then this body must condemn that anti-Semitism.
Democrats were unable to get behind a resolution that condemned only anti-Semitism. The resolution does not directly mention Ms. Omar, who is a Muslim, because of a debate that's developed between leadership and members after Ms. Omar's comments on Jews in Israel. Some Republicans called the resolution unnecessary. Doug Collins, ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, said, quote, be nice, don't hate. This resolution doesn't have to be 7 pages. The House Republicans are sitting back and letting Democrats inflict damage on themselves as they struggle to respond to the firestorm over Congresswoman Omar's comments. GOP leaders had been weighing whether to take their own action against Ms. Omar. More from Melanie Zanona, Congress reporter at Politico. Melanie, what's the plan?
They've decided to not do anything, at least for right now. Their argument is that it's better to let Democrats sort of shoot themselves in the foot as they struggle to respond to their own internal divisions. So they are just sitting back right now, sort of relishing and watching the other side erupt into chaos for once.
All right. So are they taking lessons maybe from their own playbook with what happened with Congressman Steve King from Iowa?
Well, of course, with Steve King, he is someone who has made inflammatory and controversial comments for a very long time. But Republicans have made the argument that they were very swift in their response. They immediately kicked him off the committees. Congresswoman Liz Cheney, the GOP conference chair, actually came out immediately and called the comments racist. And so now they are really trying to paint a contrast between how they responded to a controversy with one of their own members versus what the Democrats are doing, which has sort of been waffling a little bit. They're caught in the middle here, and they're just not quite sure how strong they wanted to go against one of their own.
All right, so Republicans had considered doing something additional to Ms. Omar?
That's right. They had limited options to begin with because they are in the minority, but they could have tried to attach another motion to recommit to a bill in the future. They could have forced a censure resolution, which is something that would be a sort of really formal condemnation of her on the floor. But they were concerned that that could spark a tit-for-tat with Democrats, and they might try to force censure resolutions on every time one of their members makes a misstep or a gaffe or says something controversial or anything like that. So they decided to hold off for now.
So in addition to kind of struggling with this resolution, might Democrats also seek to remove her from that House Foreign Relations Committee?
Well, that is one of the things that Republicans have called for. But as of right now, Democrats have really rejected those calls. Even those Jewish members who are really deeply uncomfortable with her rhetoric haven't gone so far as to say she should be kicked off the committee. And even the committee's chairman, Elliot Engel, who is Jewish himself and is one of the members who's been really outspoken about the need for her to apologize and for Democrats to move forward with the resolution, he has not said she should be kicked off the committee. So I don't think that is what we will see.
We're speaking with Melanie Zanona, Congress reporter at Politico. Her piece is called GOP Strategy on Omar. Let Dems struggle on their own, a reference to how Democrats are struggling to deal with comments by Minnesota freshman Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. This is just taking a lot of oxygen out of the room for issues Democrats are trying to focus on elsewhere, right?
Right. And that's the frustration right now from Democrats you hear is that they are trying to move forward with one of their signature legislative priorities, which is this election reform and voting rights package. They're actually voting it on tomorrow, but the headlines have completely been about Ilhan Omar and the Democratic internal struggles over this issue. And I would even argue it's overshadowed any of the Cohen latest news, Russia stuff, Trump. It may be the first time we've really seen a Democratic controversy overshadow that of the president. So there is a lot of frustration in the conference about that.
I saw it. Was it a tweet you sent out on Wednesday about members of, a group of Democrats emerged from a meeting and they kind of surrounded Ms. Omar? Like,
happened? It was members of the Congressional Black Caucus. They had a meeting. They've been really rallying around Omar, who also belongs to the caucus. They say it's really unfair to do a resolution at all. They don't find it necessary, especially when there are members on the other side of the aisle who have made comments that have gone, you know, unchecked by Democrats, including the president, they would argue. So they emerged from this meeting and they physically formed a barrier around her, a circle around her. So it was difficult to ask her questions where you're trying to get at her. One member, Marcia Fudge, actually stuck her arm out to try to prevent us and create a sort of shield around her. Of course, we continued to ask those questions, but she did not respond. I just think it undershows that, you know, this freshman member who's only been here 2 months is now so controversial and so high profile that she's being consumed by this. So some of the veterans are trying to take her under their wing.
Thanks, Melanie. Melanie Zanona, Congress reporter at Politico. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. FMLA, FLSA, ACA, EEOC. It's harder than ever for businesses to keep up with today's evolving alphabet soup of regulations. What's a company to do? Kronos. With Kronos, you can minimize compliance risk and track HR policies, making sure they're applied consistently and fairly. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at kronos.com/compliance. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. Thanks for joining us. A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit against President Trump and his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, filed by the adult film actress Stephanie Clifford. And that's not the only lawsuit in the news that's tied to Mr. Trump. More from This Morning's Mike Gavin.
First, a judge ruled yesterday that there was nothing left to litigate now that a non-disclosure agreement at the heart of the case involving Ms. Clifford was no longer being enforced. She had sued to invalidate an agreement she signed to keep quiet about an alleged sexual encounter with Mr. Trump. Second, Mr. Cohen yesterday filed a lawsuit against the Trump Organization, seeking nearly $2 million in unreimbursed legal fees arising from things like multiple congressional hearings. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Mr. Cohen also accused the Trump Organization of failing to reimburse his legal expenses, quote, only after it became clear that Mr. Cohen would cooperate in ongoing investigations into his work for the Trump Organization and into executives at the company. This portion of the program is brought to you by Brooklinen. It's now easier and more affordable than ever to get quality hotel sheets for your very own bed. Who doesn't love the incredible feeling of five-star hotel sheets, right? It's been difficult and expensive to get sheets like that at home until now. That's why I've been recommending Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is the fastest-growing bedding brand in the world with over 30,000 five-star reviews. They were the first DTC bedding company, meaning they work directly with manufacturers and directly with customers. No middlemen, which saves us money. With Brooklinen, I get luxury sheets without the luxury markup. My Brooklinen sheets are the best and most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on, and now it's time for your upgrade. Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer just for our listeners. You get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use the promo code DEAL at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident in their products that all sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get 10% off your first order and free shipping is to use the promo code DEAL at Brooklinen.com. That's Brooklinen, Brooklinen.com with the promo code DEAL. Brooklinen, these really are the best sheets ever. Find the offer at Brooklinen.com with the promo code DEAL. 20 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Warden, former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort has been sentenced to nearly 4 years in prison for tax and bank fraud related to his work advising Ukrainian politicians, much less than what was called for under sentencing guidelines. Manafort had no visible reaction as he heard the 47-month sentence, which could have been much worse since sentencing guidelines called for a 20-year term. Manafort faces sentencing in a separate case in Washington next Wednesday on two conspiracy charges to which he pleaded guilty last September. He faces a statutory maximum of 10 years in that case. Divided in debate, but mostly united on a final vote, the House has passed a resolution condemning anti-Semitism and other bigotry. The 407-23 vote followed emotional infighting over how to respond to Democratic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar's recent comments suggesting House supporters of Israel have dual allegiances. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
All of us must remember, as members of Congress, as President of the United States, that our words are weightier once we cross the threshold into Congress, and indeed they weigh a ton when someone becomes the President of the United States.
All 23 votes against the measure came from Republicans. Police in Maryland have apprehended a man on the FBI's 10 most wanted list who's accused in the 2014 strangulation of a New Jersey woman. Prince George's County Police Chief Hank Stawinski says officers approached Lamont Stevenson, who was in a truck, in response to a suspicious person call early yesterday.
They engaged this individual, and he initially stated that he was homeless and that he was just trying to get out of the weather. That conversation continued, however, and they asked for his name and an address.
Stevenson was taken into custody on an unlawful flight to avoid prosecution warrant in connection with the New Jersey murder. Police also have a warrant charging Stevenson with a recent murder in Maryland. Sad news from the world of sports. Hall of Fame pitcher Tom Seaver is suffering from dementia, and his family says he will not make any more public appearances. The 74-year-old right-hander who led the Miracle Mets in 1969 to one of the most improbable championships in sports history plans to keep working on his vineyard in California.
That's tough news to take for a Mets fan.
Absolutely.
Man, Tom, terrific. That, yep. You know, this is the 50th anniversary of their World Series.
Yeah, and they were hoping he would be
there. He's not going to be able to take part.
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Philadelphia is the first major U.S. city to ban cashless stores. Wall Street Journal reporter Scott Calvert says that's placing it at the forefront of a debate that pits retail innovation against lawmakers trying to protect all citizens' access to the marketplace. Scott, what's going on?
Well, there's a small but growing move by retailers away from accepting cash to a situation where they just accept cash, a credit or debit cards, or maybe a mobile payment. And that has generated something of a backlash. And there's a new law in Philadelphia that will take effect in July that says most retail businesses in the city of Philadelphia have to accept cash.
The retailers, I guess, can't love being told how to run their businesses. What's reaction been like?
Well, that's right. So, you know, there's a sense that this is something that ought to be essentially left to the market, left to retailers to experiment with and see what works and see what how consumers respond, and that government shouldn't have its thumb on the scale. So there has been some concern voiced along those lines. But the flip side is the supporters of it say that by not accepting cash, they run the risk of shutting out a swath of consumers who tend to be at the lower end of the income scale, who may not have a credit card or debit card, and therefore be, you know, frozen out.
There are some exceptions here to this rule, correct?
That's right. So parking garages, wholesale clubs like BJ's or Costco, rental car companies, hotels, because you know you need to give a credit card for incidentals, all of those things are exempt. And they tried to carve out an exemption for Amazon, which has a new kind of convenience store called Amazon Go, where basically all you do is when you walk in, you swipe your smartphone, and you have to be an Amazon account holder, and you go into the store and you take what you want off the shelves, you know, a sandwich, muffin, whatever, and then when you walk out, it automatically, it knows what you have in your hand, basically, and it automatically charges your account when you walk out the door. And the issue is the exemption in the law uses the word membership for the part that was meant to apply to Amazon Go. And the problem is that you don't need to have a Prime membership to shop there, but you do need to be an Amazon account holder. So according to the city of Philadelphia, Amazon doesn't think that applies to it. And so there's obviously, I think, some concern on the company's part because they are rolling out these Amazon Go stores around the country.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Scott Calvert about his story entitled Philadelphia is First U.S. City to Ban Cashless Stores. This is kind of where the world is going, though, it seems, no?
Yes, it's trending in that direction. It is still a very small percentage of stores that are cashless, but it's going in that direction.
Thanks, Scott. It's Wall Street Journal reporter Scott Calvert. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Getting fit and staying healthy always sounds easier said than done, right? OpenFit is bringing you something new that makes it even easier to never miss a sweat session. OpenFit takes all of the complexity out of losing weight and getting fit. It's a brand new, super simple streaming service that allows you to work out from the comfort of your living room in as little as 10 minutes a day. View on your computer. Watch it on web-enabled TV, a tablet, smartphone, and Roku. You can join me on a fitness journey personalized just for you. Use my code Gordon and start using OpenFit for your journey to a healthier life. Right now, during the OpenFit 30-Day Challenge, our listeners get a special extended 30-day free trial membership to OpenFit, where you can lose up to 15 pounds in 30 days when you text the word Gordon to 303030. You get full access to OpenFit, all the workouts and nutrition information totally free. Again, just text Gordon to 303030.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Friday, March 8th. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Paul Manafort sentenced to 47 months. The House has passed a watered-down resolution that condemns hate. Trump administration may force hospital and doctors to reveal publicly the prices they negotiate with insurance companies. Labor Department proposes making more workers eligible for overtime pay. South by Southwest opens in Austin. Captain Marvel hits theaters today. Reports say the Broncos are trading Case Keenum to the Redskins. And who a Mega Millions jackpot winner is thanking for his victory. That story in about 20 minutes. To use a sports phrase for the education field, teachers seem to be running downhill right now. Governors and legislators in more than two dozen states are proposing increasing teacher pay following strikes that crippled school operations and left hundreds of thousands of students missing school in recent months. Wall Street Journal reporter Tawnell Hobbs has a look at some of the proposals. Tawnell, what have you noticed?
teachers have been striking, and the lawmakers have been paying attention. I've noticed just a lot of states putting up bills or proposed budgets that would increase these teacher salaries. There's at least 25 states right now looking at some kind of legislative action or proposed budget that would do that. And surprisingly, a lot of these efforts are bipartisan. And in the past, we really hadn't seen that. So, you know, it just seems to be twofold the reason why we're seeing so much activity, you know, at the state level. And, you know, some of the legislators, they cite teacher strikes. They want to avoid them, and they want to go ahead and raise teacher salary. And then they also want to retain teachers. You know, right now, you know, every state is reporting some kind of teacher vacancies. So the lawmakers are saying, look, we can avoid a strike, and also we can attract teachers by raising pay, which obviously the strikes really did shine a light on teacher pay.
Boy, does this go back to momentum created by West Virginia teachers last year?
That's when it started. I mean, everybody watched that case because for one, it was statewide, and it was West Virginia, and it was like, wow, can they do this? I mean, you know, teachers have complained about their salary for years, but they had never really taken an activism role to do anything about it.
Wow. Then you had, Oakland, Denver, and some of the bigger cities, I guess, this year.
L.A. was really big. I mean, there were so many people that really watched the L.A. strike, and the L.A. strike did inspire. I know when I talked to Oakland, they were just, you know, we just hope that we can pull off, you know, a strike like they did in L.A. because they got a lot of attention and they got what they wanted.
So explain, I guess, what some legislatures are looking at specifically. You mentioned Texas thrown out there, possibly $5,000 raise per teacher?
Yes, and that was actually that bill came forward by a Republican senator, and that's what that would pay. And, you know, teachers, obviously, they said, we would like to have more, but we definitely will take that. So you have that, and then, you know, Virginia, right now they're looking at a 5% teacher raise. That's just really awaiting the governor's signature. And, you know, in Arkansas, just not too long ago, they approved to raise the minimum teacher salary by 13% to $36,000 over the next 4 years.
Wow. Why now, I guess? Because as you point out, like, teacher strikes and complaints about pay, that's been around for decades. So why now?
I think why now, because the sheer number, I mean, you gotta realize, you know, what we're seeing now, teachers struck more in the last year than at any time in the past 25 years. And, you know, there's a lot of people watching around the country. There's a lot of people that, you know, they didn't realize the average teacher salary or, oh, God, we're paying them this much. Maybe we should pay them more. And these strikes have shined a light on, you know, what teachers were considered their plight as far as getting better benefits and smaller class sizes. After the recession, there were a lot of teacher budgets cut. And, you know, some states have yet to replenish that money to the levels that we saw before the recession.
Mm. We're speaking with Tawnell Hobbs, Wall Street Journal education reporter. She's written a piece entitled States Propose Increased Teacher Pay After Months Filled with Protests. Go back a second, I guess, to why we have the teacher shortage. Is it the current job market today where you can find a better paying gig, or is it the idea that the pay is not so great?
You know, a lot of it is the job market because, I mean, you know, some teachers have felt like the pay hasn't been great for years, but they were feeling kind of like, well, you know, with the job market as it is, I need to stay here. But with the job market getting better, a lot of what you're seeing has to do with that because teachers are leaving the field.
What about in terms of benefits, pensions or things along those lines? Are those part of these conversations in addition to pay?
That is definitely part of the conversations, and it was a big part of the conversation in L.A.
Thanks, Tawnell. Wall Street Journal reporter Tawnell Hobbs. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter, @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly on Twitter, at Gordon Deal. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Friday Beyond the Headlines now. This morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it looks like the battle over crab legs continues at buffet restaurants across the country. Only a little over a week since we told you about the brawl in an Alabama buffet over a delayed tray of crab legs involving serving tongs being used as weapons. Another story of crabby customers has emerged, this time in New York City. A woman named Donna Brown posted a video of a melee that broke out at a Queens Chinese buffet in late February. According to police, a 30-year-old man and a female companion were sitting and eating when a group of up to 10 people started punching and kicking them in the face and body, causing swelling and pain. Police were not able to confirm that the fight was about crab legs, though that's what Brown says she witnessed as she was filming the video. Interestingly, this incident took place just one day after the crab-related fracas in Alabama, which led to two arrests and leads us to ask, do we need to rethink how we dole out crab legs at buffet restaurants?
We need a law.
We need
Sounds like we need a law.
Let's get Congress on this.
Take a number like you do at the deli counter in the supermarket.
Right, something like that.
Meats.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Yeah, and I told you when we talked about this last week, I'm steering clear of all this to begin with. I'm going to be nowhere near this. I'm going to be where the ribs are. Maybe a more high-end place has like a carving station or something. I'm not going to sit there playing around, cracking open crab legs all day while, you know, more food needs to be put into my belly.
Yeah, well, that's a good point about return on investment, right?
Right.
You're paying like $6.99 or something. For the buffet, you don't want to get tangled spending 6-7 minutes on crab legs.
Now,
like,
I know they're
cracking and pulling and nibbling and stuff, where you could be on your fourth round of like fried wontons or something.
Exactly. Like, I know they are a high-end, more expensive item,
but
again, for the amount of the sheer poundage, you know, the sheer volume of meat or food that you get,
it's not
worth it.
I agree. Now, what was it, 10 people ganged up on two? That's the deal here?
Yeah, yeah. So obviously some tension going on there.
Jeez.
And if you thought, Gordon, that D.C. lawmakers had found every single thing they could possibly disagree on, you were most definitely wrong. Canadian rock band Nickelback, despite selling well over 50 million albums worldwide, are the band people most love to hate, and that even spilled out on the floor of the House of Representatives yesterday when Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan, a Democrat, dragged the band's name into the middle of a debate on a criminal justice amendment.
77,000 people did comment. Only four wanted to keep this provision. Everyone else wanted to change this out of 77,000. That's probably about the percent of people who think Nickelback is their favorite band in this country. It's pretty low.
That disparaging comment didn't sit well with Randy Davis, a Republican congressman from Illinois, who apparently shot an incredulous look back to Pocan, then playfully defended Nickelback.
Why would you criticize one of the greatest bands of the 90s?
Wow. All right. One more reason why there's a difference between Democrats and Republicans. Clearly found on the floor of Congress today.
Davis later admitted to having a Nickelback song on his running playlist. Pocan commended the Republicans' brave admission of Nickelback fandom as the chamber enjoyed a laugh at this latest division between the two parties and then agreed to the amendment by voice vote.
Nice.
How about that?
That is very clever. Very clever. Hey, good to see them joking on the floor of the Capitol.
That's what I took from this. Look, everybody's smiling. We don't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be all fire and brimstone.
Yep.
You know, we can, you know, and eventually they, you know, came to an agreement. So.
And Nickelback continues to enjoy some weird publicity.
Yeah,
right.
They'll probably sell another million
ongoing
albums because of this
weird publicity. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
With this job, having two hands won't cut it. Which is why I thank the stars I have a third, Grainger. When my two hands are full, I fully rely on Grainger. They're America's number one source for industrial-grade supplies. So, whether I'm fixing a furnace or fastening a faucet, Grainger hands me what I need when I need it. Which makes me a pretty lucky guy. Because when it comes to needing an extra hand, Grainger's got your back. Call or click Grainger.com to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. Older adults sometimes get themselves a dog for companionship, right? But the pets are increasingly sending their owners to the emergency room. Researchers at the University of Pennsylvania say in recent years, the numbers of seniors seeking medical treatment for injuries related to dog walking has spiked from about 1,700 in 2014 to about 4,400 in 2017. The numbers appear in a report published yesterday in JAMA Surgery, which suggests seniors' increasingly active lifestyles may be the biggest factor because dog ownership among the elderly has been stable. The findings say hip fractures are among the most common injuries, and nearly 80% of the patients have been women who generally have lower bone density. The Associated Press says 69-year-old Susan Bush has been injured multiple times while walking her dogs, including suffering a broken leg while trying to prevent her dog from chasing a bear near her Pennsylvania cottage. The good news, dog walking injuries represent fewer than 1% of fractures among older adults. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Court in a federal judge has sentenced Paul Manafort, who served as Donald Trump's 2016 campaign chairman, to 47 months in prison for dodging taxes and committing bank fraud, much less than he could have faced. The judge called the sentencing guidelines, which call for 19 to 24 years in prison, out of whack. Kevin Downing is Manafort's attorney.
Most importantly, what you saw today is the same thing that we had said from day one. There is absolutely no evidence that Paul Manafort was involved with any collusion with any government official from Russia.
Manafort was convicted in August of not paying taxes on more than $16 million in income he earned from advising Russia-aligned politicians in Ukraine and of lying to two banks from which he sought loans in 2015. He'll be sentenced next week in a separate case on conspiracy charges. The Senate Intelligence Committee is interested in re-interviewing Donald Trump Jr. and other witnesses after President Trump's former lawyer Michael Cohen spoke to the committee last week. The committee first interviewed Trump Jr. in 2017. Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine says senators clearly need to re-interview some witnesses whose accounts Cohen contradicts. She did not name the witnesses. The U.S. ambassador to China says the U.S. and China have yet to set a date for a summit to resolve their trade dispute, as neither side feels an agreement is imminent. Terry Branstad says the preparations for such a meeting aren't yet underway either. Branstad says negotiations need to further narrow the gap in their positions, including over the reinforcement of a potential deal before summit arrangements are made. Well, a new LinkedIn survey finds that women are less aggressive than men when they apply for jobs, applying for fewer positions, and asking for help less frequently. The report's authors say women tend to screen themselves out of the conversation and end up applying to fewer jobs than men. Women were also 26% less likely to ask for a referral, even when they had a connection to someone at the company that was hiring. The disparity may not be about women's confidence in their ability to get the job done, but about taking the job qualifications too literally.
What's your read on that? Because I think my wife would probably fall into that category.
Oh, I think men think they can do anything, whether they can or not. They go in acting like they can.
Yeah, just
a big generalization
okay.
On my part.
No, I think that's somewhat fair. but it's the women's approach that I don't get.
Yeah, they don't stand up for themselves
as
much.
I guess. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. So a lottery winner from New Jersey says his $273 million Mega Millions jackpot was only possible because a stranger helped reunite him with the winning ticket. Mike Wierski, who's 54, recounted the story at a press conference yesterday, says that immediately after he bought lottery tickets last week at a Quick Check in western New Jersey, he became distracted by his phone, accidentally left the tickets at the store.
It's the typical cell phone deal. I was paying more attention to my cell phone. I put the tickets down to put my money away and did something with my phone and just walked away.
Returned to the store the next day. There, he was told someone had turned in the tickets. Mr. Wierski says he plans to take the $162 million lump sum, says he's recently divorced and unemployed, and that searching for work will no longer be a priority. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.